watch it. So this afternoon, I'm going to talk more about this practice of metta, this quality of metta, and trying to see if it's possible, if I'll offer this instruction around actually using metta as an object of practice, and using it as an anchor, which you can do if it feels right. I've been using it for an anchor for many, many years now, and it's my primary object during practice, and has been for quite some time. But finding the metta, sometimes not as easy as finding the breath, or finding the body, or finding the sound. So when we use basic objects of practice, we try, the Buddha was very pragmatic in the sense of giving us objects that are quite accessible. So we have things like breathing. If you could breathe in right now and just touch it and just get it right away. The body, and various aspects of the physical realm, the world of the body, which has lots of portals through the body. And that's very reliable. It's always available. It's a portal. It gets us back. It only does now. But I noticed for me, for many, many years, that was very useful and to some degree a little bit unsatisfying, because there was too much pain in my body. Not like physical pain, like my knee hurts, but just more of a emotional, I had like this membrane of emotional woundedness that seemed to basically cover my whole body. And trying to use the breath and the body as a primary object was very challenging. And so we can shift things around a little bit. So we could say something like the body and the breath is an object of focus, attention. We can focus our attention on that object. We can try to meet that object with kindness and friendliness and a sense of ease, which is the spirit of metta, of ease, to be at ease with that which is difficult. Not needing it to be different, but meeting it in a cooperative type of way. And if you've been finding that is useful and available, you can use that as the object. So the attitude can kind of become the object. And this word metta comes from the Pali word mita, which actually literally means friend. And trying to befriend present time experience. It also, too, I like it because it does point me to and open my mind to and begin to recognize something that I just call basic goodness, that there's a sense of something about my experience. There's a low grade, sometimes a high grade, but always there's always been a low grade attitude in my experience where I want to do good, I want to be good. There's a kind of basic goodness that is available to me if I can find it. And sometimes we would use the word sila in Dharma practice, that there's a kind of our core sense of not wanting to be harmful to ourselves. A core intention, a desire to be free, to be good to ourselves. And if you can feel into that intention, then you can really just use that actually as a basis so you can come back to that idea. Because I found it very helpful, because what it does is it undermines the pleasure-pain dichotomy. It undermines the idea that for the meditation practice to be valuable or useful, it has to feel good, has to be pleasant, if it feels good and it's pleasant, then I must be doing it right. And if it doesn't feel good and it's not pleasant, then I must be doing it wrong. And then that sense of basic goodness gets obscured and covered up by this idea. I lose that. And I get caught into this view that there's something wrong with me. If there wasn't something wrong with me, then it would be pleasant and good and agreeable. But there is, and that whole thing emerges. And so when we try to use right view or complete view, part of the complete view, I think, is to recognize our own sense of basic goodness. And that actually view, that idea, is enough. That, I would say, is the seed of metta, is the idea of a desire to do good, to be good, that I'm okay. It's okay, whatever it is. My friend Eve Ekman, who I teach with sometimes, uses this word I love called okayness, my sense of okayness. Just a basic sense of, things to be going better, sure. Be a little bit easier, a little bit less tired, a little this. Yes, of course, and I'm okay. I'm okay. It's okay. Whatever it is, it's okay. And so there's a sense of permission. That's just allowing whatever it is that's arising, that's really kind of, we don't want to be there. We just kind of let it and say, okay. And that's the nature of befriending something, is bringing it and saying, okay, I really don't care, I like you very much, and I really don't want it to be like this. And that radical acceptance of, yes, I would prefer it to be otherwise, and I really don't want this, and I really don't like this part of my mind, and I don't. But, okay. It's okay. Whatever it is, it's okay. So that's a great thing to remember to recognize. Can you remember to recognize that it's okay? It's good. It's good to be here. It's good enough. And that actually, even just saying that, that makes my whole nervous system kind of, oh, okay, I did not have that information earlier. It's like there's this way in which we can use, when I use metta as an object, in the way I'll teach it here, in the guided practice, it's trying to bring a little bit more attention to the out-breath. There's something about when we breathe out, we access the sympathetic nervous system. And there's actually something easeful about the out-breath. Usually when we pay attention to mindfulness of breathing, we tend to be a little bit more focused on the in-breath, because that's where it begins. I don't know where we got that idea, but we think everything starts with the in-breath. And then when we breathe out, we tend to wander. Kind of like breathe in, and then we'll breathe out, wander, and then kind of let the mind wander. But actually bringing more awareness to the out-breath. It's okay. It's like, you know, when you are with somebody that you care about or somebody that you know, and maybe there's some conflict or something happened you're not sure what happened, and then you get the relieving news and you go, oh, okay, that's what happened. And sigh, that outward sigh, that we discharge that dukkha, we discharge tension in the body, we release some kind of subatomic clinging. Instead of using the breath as sort of grabbing and dropping, we sort of grab the in-breath and drop the out-breath, and grab the in-breath and drop the out-breath, and grabbing and dropping. So there's this out-breath, there's this returning to a sense of, okay. Whatever it is. I mean, there's not much going on around here anyway. Like, it has to be okay. You're just sitting in this old cabin. You know, you just had lunch, there'll be dinner later, you get to sleep later, it's all good. But I'm sure you're getting involved in some insane scenarios that are just not happening.
We're the okay corral.
Exactly. You get all worked up. And you're like, oh. So that's that metta quality is when it's infused and congruent with the sati mindfulness, that there's a way in which we remember to recognize the present moment experience, but we also to remember to recognize our own sense of kind, goodness, wanting to be good to ourselves, self-care. Cheryl uses that term a lot. I like that. So that can kind of become a way in which we anchor. And I have found coming back to that is much more, feels much more homeostatic than sometimes my body or my breath, because underneath that, in the body, there for me has always been this sense of a wounded membrane, kind of emotional dissatisfaction. And I somehow feel blaming of that, or I feel responsible for that, or I feel this would be going better if there was something different about me. I have to be doing this wrong. I must be. It must be me. And that's up. And that kind of negative attitude, bias towards ourselves. So we want to replace that with this spirit of metta, of goodness, of kindness. And when it was, from what I've been told and have read, that this metta practice was something that the Buddha taught initially as an antidote to fear. Because that's the experience of not being okay is oftentimes the experience of fear. I'm afraid something's not going to happen. I'm afraid there's something going on out there I don't know about. And that kind of low-grade emotion of fear, which is in the body, creates a body sense of restlessness and delusion, for sure. And then that uneasiness gives rise to some kind of story narrative in the mind that's saying, well, if I feel this way, then there must be a reason. Let's find the reason that I'm not okay. Let's look for that object. How hard is it going to take to find the reason why you're not okay? So we can use the body, so I use this practice of embodied metta. We can use metta in the body as a way to cool down the fear, to regulate the fear, to become homeostatic, which is the evenness of mind and body. Well, you are, I know you're a person with all kinds of memories and a role in society, but you are also a mammal. And as a mammal, what you desire most and what feels best for us is to be in a state of homeostasis, to become homeostatic. Mm-hmm. And we do really good when we're homeostatic. We perform really well. But sometimes we have to do strange things like travel out to the middle of nowhere and sit quietly for days to create the experience of homeostasis. And so when we look at the system that might work well with this is we're using metta here as an anchor, but we're also using it as a complete view, a right view practice. So the view is I'm good, I'm okay, I'm already okay. And that becomes the view. And we want to remember to recognize that, because we forget that. I forget that I'm okay much of the time. And I could give you countless arguments of all the ways in which I'm not okay. I don't know why I would want to plead that case, but I oftentimes find myself pleading that case. And then that view, that idea, through moving the mind in that direction, through intention, becomes an intention, becomes a behavior, becomes almost like a psychological behavior, where we're remembering to recognize, to inform ourselves, to let ourselves know that we actually indeed are okay. Oh, you're all right. I understand all of what's going on, and you're also okay. And so that intention, that's a cultivation of a mental state, of a movement in the mind. And so oftentimes in traditional metta we use phrases. I won't do a traditional phrase. I'll probably offer the most basic phrase that I have been using for a long time, and it seems to serve me well, is may I be at ease. And just kind of remembering to recognize, may I be at ease, a well-wishing. Recognizing that maybe there's pain in the moment, there's confusion, there's frustration, there's something challenging about this moment, and may I be at ease with that. That cools it down, it cools it down, it cools it down. And sometimes you'll actually even have this emotion of metta, which is an enjoyable emotion. In our culture, we think about the seven basic emotions, and we talk about emotions and joy being an emotion. But metta is an enjoyable emotion. My teacher, Stephen Smith, would call it a beautiful spiritual emotion. All the Brahma Viharas are beautiful spiritual emotions. And as a result of practicing metta, you might find you feel this sense of liberation or ease or contentment, or like, oh man, I might be okay. You know, it's almost a little bit psychedelic sometimes when you get that. It kind of has this liberation quality, of letting go of these other views and fixed views. So it's embodied. It's not just something that we think is a good idea, maybe. There's an embodiment to the practice and to the spirit quality emotion of this metta. And there's also something about it, I will say this, because I struggle with this practice as much as I've benefited from this practice. There is, because it has an emotional component to it, there is something about meditation practice and Dharma practice in general that has a nonverbal kind of thing about it, which is why it's really hard for me to explain, because it's nonverbal. And so emotion also has a nonverbal component to it. So there's something about it that, dare I even say, is even mysterious about these kinds of practices. But when you recognize them and you can feel into them and you can sort of verify them, they lose that mystique. You're like, oh no, this is actually really good, and this is really true, and this is really part of my humanity. I was born with this on my hard drive. It's just been buried up because I got too much crap files on the desktop. It's there. It's just how we can work meditatively, experientially, to uncover that which is waiting for you. And again, it just starts with this idea, the seed idea in the mind of this being a possibility. So we're not trying to make it. We're just trying to uncover that which is already there. And one of the things that makes it hard is there's this wonderful practice in Tibetan Buddhism called subtle body. And when we start to sit, and you're all probably experiencing subtle body right now, is you sit for a couple of days and you come to the body, you come to the breath, you come to the body, and what happens is we all get that sort of membrane of pain or woundedness, or there's something histrionic about our lives that's been hard. And if we can just sit with that and just sit with that, there is this inherent sense of well-being that emerges out of that. But we have all these brilliant and just complex defense strategies to block us from what we really want to feel. And so sometimes, you know, when there is a sense of pain, especially if it's an emotional kind of pain or distress, it's just like you just gotta hang in there just a little bit more, just hang in there just a little bit more. May I be at ease, may I be at ease, and then the metta kind of will come out of that experience. It's in the body. All the good stuff's in the body, it turns out. We just have to kind of work in that way. So I think that's all I'm going to say about that. And we're actually going to just try it out. So if you want to stand for a minute, if your body's a little sore, you can do that.